Welcome to the Transformational Leader Podcast, sponsored by the John Maxwell Team. This show is designed to help leaders, influencers, and high achievers alike transform the world through positive influence.
Welcome to the Transformational Leader Podcast. My name is Paul Gustafson, and joining me today is my co-host, Mike Harbor. Mike, good to be with you.
Hey, Paul. Always a pleasure. Love doing the Transformational Leader Podcast with you.
Mike, today we're talking about obstacles, understanding what it takes to face them, and some thoughts on what it takes to overcome them.
Yeah, that's right, Paul. And to set the stage, we are sharing with you an interview with Miss Julie Wells. She was a top 30 nominee for the 2018 John C. Maxwell Transformational Leadership Award.
Yeah. In fact, we're going to jump right into our leadership spotlight. This is an interview where our colleague Rick Morris sat down with Julie to talk about leadership and her perspective.
Yep, let's do it, Paul. 2018 Transformational Leadership Award nominee. We know you'll enjoy the dialogue.
Hi, this is Rick Morris with the Transformational Leader Podcast. I'm sitting down today with Julie Wells, who's the Executive Director of the GLAAD Adoption Agency and co-pastor for the Cathedral in Evansville, Indiana. How you doing, Julie?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. And tell the audience a little bit about your leadership journey.
Oh, well, I started my leadership journey, you know, with my education. I went to college here in Evansville and got a degree in psychology, which no one tells you you can do nothing with that once you graduate. So quickly learned I needed to continue my education. I ended up getting a master's degree in social work and then started working with my mom, who founded GLAAD Adoption Agency. And so I became a social worker and started my journey there.
And talk to us a little bit about that adoption agency.
So we're a private, not-for-profit agency in Southern Indiana. And so we work with women in crisis pregnancy. And I think what's unique about our program is oftentimes when you think about adoption agency, you think of adoptive parents. However, our program is built more around the needs of women that are in stressed pregnancy. And maybe they'll be interested in choosing adoption and maybe not. And that kind of grew out of my parents' own adoption decision. I was a biological child, and then my parents experienced a secondary infertility, and they adopted my brother. And so my mom was prepared for adding a child to our family, but she said she was not prepared for meeting my brother's birth mom and watching her say goodbye to her son. And so in that moment, my mom just said, she whispered in her heart to God, if I could ever help another woman in this situation, I will do it. And so grassroots, we are grassroots. This agency started with a card table, a typewriter, and a telephone. So this just grew out of a very personal experience. And so our agency is designed, our programs are designed to just meet very practical needs of women with free counseling, help you get to and from the doctor. Do you have to turn in a bunch of papers for Medicaid that you can't find or don't know where they are? Well, let's help you get those things done. So we're very practical in our application of how we help others.
And what have been some of the bigger obstacles you've had to overcome with that?
Okay, so a huge obstacle, I mean, for me, and you know, I try not to be overwhelmed by obstacles. In fact, I don't know if you can relate to this, Rick, but I am a competitive person. Like if we sit down and we're going to play Uno, you're going down. I have no mercy. I want to win. So obstacles to me, I just confront them with like, okay, this problem is not insolvable. What can we build to move around this? So because I have come into the position of being an executive director of a very small company, I still feel like we're still emerging. We're still creating this structure. And I feel like what's so unique about my mother is that she was really led by her own personal experience and just a sincere passion and desire to be helpful for women in crisis. And she just was led into this field. And because of her passion, I feel like that's what really drove her. And what we're learning now about adoption and research, my mom was doing that in 1985.
So it's safe to say then that she's been a transformational leader in your life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A transformational leader in many, many ways. Sometimes I liked that and sometimes not. But definitely, you know, as reviewing my life and my career time, and not just to mention my childhood, you know, being with my mom, she's certainly a transformational leader for me, no doubt.
So what's some of the best advice mom gave to you that you follow to this day?
Oh, lots of great advice. Number one great advice is that when you're working with a woman in crisis, and we are, our business is fully female. We have all females working here, and we're also working with women. So there's a lot of estrogen flowing in this office every day. We're surrounded. When we go into a situation and there is a crisis, then my mom would say this, just meet the immediate need. Like, people cannot talk to you if they're hungry. They cannot talk about their life. I remember one time that I drove up to an apartment building to pick up a young woman for an appointment, and she had experienced a house fire the night before. And she came running out to the car with no shoes and told me about this house fire. And, you know, just because that's the way that my mom trained me, I said, well, let's just get in the car. She didn't want to come to the office because she was embarrassed that she didn't have shoes. So let's just get in the car and we're going to go get some shoes and we'll solve that problem right now. And so, you know, it's those kinds of things. And it just seems like those practical things can really make a difference in someone's life.
So you said earlier, you're very, very competitive. So how do you keep a culture of teamwork and keep your team working together?
Okay, so I feel like this is an excellent question. Like, the culture of teamwork is so valuable and important to me. And I feel like this has been a big learning process in my personal journey, is that because I am competitive by nature, I want to be good at everything. I want to be excellent at everything that I do. And coming to grips and just coming to terms with the fact that you are not good at everything. You are not good at everything that you do. And really, that's an impossible standard. That's an impossible standard to hold anyone to. So just accepting the fact that I'm not good at everything, but there are people who are good at the things that I'm not so good at. And if I can surround myself with people who are good at the things that I'm not so good at, and maybe we have some overlap there, like there's some things that we are all gifted in some of the same areas, then that is a successful team. So I don't have to be good at everything, but I do need to be wise enough to surround myself with people who make up for my weaknesses so that I can really push forward in my strength. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Tell me about a vision that you had or one of the initiatives that you've undertaken with this team and one of your more successful wins.
Well, one of the responsibilities that I had was in taking over and leading our ministry in Haiti, which is an orphanage called the Haiti Christian Orphanage. And the church has been operating that since 1968. And so taking leadership and ownership of that team was a very powerful experience for me. Because number one, the problems were overwhelming. Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere of the world. So very easily, the team and myself could become very overwhelmed with the magnitude of poverty and problems. And when we would solve one problem with food delivery service, then we would have a problem with the generator, or gas expenses went up, or certain staff weren't able to come to work that day because of the transportation issues that exist in Haiti. So constantly coming up with, we have so much to do, not enough money to do it. We need more of this. We need more of that. So trying to focus that team on what can we solve today? Like, let's pick one or two. It was like trying to hold back wild horses. Like, when you go into this team meeting, you have this team of all creative people who are ready to just solve problems. But we really had to hone in and focus, or else we'll spend 2 hours just talking about all the things that need to be done. And then we've made no progress in actually getting anything done. So I feel like, to me, that was a great achievement that I could lead the team, and that in the time that I was responsible as a leader of that team, that we were able to keep the orphanage funded. The kids were fed, they went to school, their education was completed. We were able to graduate kids out of the program and giving them vocational training and some help to transition them into life back out of the orphanage and into the community in their hometown. So that, to me, is a win.
Absolutely. And so when you're getting into that type of leadership, that servant leadership, what's some of the advice that you give to your team, say, before you go to Haiti or something of that sort?
I feel like just some general advice that is really important for our team is, I really do not want our team, in any team that I'm leading, I do not want us to be afraid of failure. I think this is why I've been a John Maxwell fan for so long, is that years ago, somebody handed me Failing Forward, one of his books. And I have been just inspired by this small statement: mistakes are the price that we pay for progress. And that's when I really began to learn that fear inhibits creativity. And if we're afraid of failing, and all of those great stories that are in the book of highly successful people who failed multiple times, that this is one thing we've learned. If we have a failure, we know to not do it this way. This way did not work. And so now we're going to come back together, and people are more creative. They are more efficient. They're more productive when there's a freedom to dream and to think outside the box. And so I feel like in leadership, that's really important. And number one, we're all learners. We're here to learn from each other. When I, and anyone in particular, like when I come into any kind of environment, even if it's a one-on-one leadership thing, I have a young woman in my office, or I'm at the Children's Center, which is the state hospital for children here, is located in Evansville, Indiana, and I'm working with kids over there, or I'm in Haiti, or I'm wherever, I'm at Walmart, I don't know, I'm all kinds of places. But wherever you are, and you're on that one-on-one leadership with someone else, to me, taking the position of the learner is so important. If I come into a situation, and it can include a team meeting, if I come into this meeting and I am in the position of the expert, then I am putting all kinds of pressure on myself to know the answer for everything, or to be highly critical, or take the position of this is good or this is bad. Now, if I enter that same situation as the learner, now it's a different dynamic. I come in trying to understand. I'm learning from you. I view the other person as you're the expert in your life, or you're the expert in this particular area. So help me learn where you're coming from. Help me learn by letting me hear your story. And then that's really when I can do my best work. Because when I'm learning about someone, I'm really learning about a team, I'm learning about multiple people on that team or an individual, I'm really looking for and I'm really listening for their particular gifts, their particular talents, so that I can strengthen the things that they're already good at.
So when we talk through that, especially when we start to solicit expert advice, what about those people that refuse to kind of take that expert advice? How do you work with people in that situation?
Well, you know, you can't change anybody. I can change no one. I can only change myself. And I can tell you right now that that is a full-time job. There's just no extra time for trying to change other people. I just have to work on myself. So when people are not good, and I think this is what I understand you to say, Rick, that when people are not good at taking advice or hearing what you have to say, then sometimes you just have to say that exactly. I'm not sure that my advice is valuable. I'm not sure that the direction I'm giving you is helpful. And then it's interesting to see how people come back with that. So what do they respond? How do they respond to that statement? Like, what I'm giving you or what I'm sharing with you, I'm thinking is not very helpful. So what is your plan for getting help or for change or for making something different? And so you kind of know the scenario. I think this might be what you're talking about is as a leader, when maybe you might be sharing or you might be encouraging someone to try something different, and they say things like, I did that. It didn't work. I already tried that. It was horrible. But in actuality, like when you really dig in, did they really try it? I mean, did they really put effort there? Was it a sustainable length of time that we invested in this particular behavior change or this particular different thing that I'm trying to do in my life? Or was it just, I tried it, it didn't work? But sometimes you can't break through that wall. And that's an important thing to learn. Otherwise, I will spend my time beating my head against a wall, trying to motivate someone who really isn't interested in moving in that direction.
What was one of those walls for you that you had to break through?
Receiving criticism. That was hard for me. I don't think anybody likes to receive criticism, but as a leader, you have to have people in your life that are there to say the truth, right? They got to tell you some hard things and you have to be able to hear them. And so because of my nature, I don't like to think that I did something wrong. That is hard for me. And I also don't like to think, and I especially, this is a better word to say, I especially don't like to think that I let someone down. I don't like that. However, it isn't possible for me to live my life without ever doing something wrong or never letting someone down. I mean, that is, it's not a possibility. So that group of people that I allow to be in my life or be close to my life, those are people that I need their honest feedback. And I have to be able to hear that. So one of those walls for me was that I had to work on how am I going to receive criticism and let it not like destroy me or make me upset or really ruin my inspiration or my passion for my job and my life and in lots of different areas. And I started to work on, and this is just like an internal thing. I mean, I don't know that there's any particular aha moment other than just my own internal struggle, but I started to work on receiving criticism and reframing it. Maybe the word criticism is just not a good word. So I had to reframe it into these people that I have given permission in my life to speak difficult things to me or say hard things to me or say things to me that would be very hard for me to hear. Those folks, they care about me.
Yeah.
They're invested in my success. They're invested in me personally as a friend, as a family member, as a colleague. They're invested in me. So when I need to hear that, like, they're trying to help you be better at what you do. They're trying to strengthen something, a strength. You know, I think another concept that I've really drawn out of John Maxwell is that we have a tendency as Americans to focus on our weaknesses. And that's where we want to build from. We want to work on our weaknesses. But what about the things that we're already naturally good at doing? What if we all started building on our strengths? Like, I'm good at this, and this is the thing that I should accelerate in my life. And I can't accelerate if I don't allow wise people around me to help me with that process. So to hear it as a help and not as a criticism is a good reframe for me. And I have to coach myself through that sometimes. And sometimes it's easier than others, but it works. It really, really works.
Iron sharpens iron.
Amen. That's the truth. That's the truth. I had a friend, and I feel like she's highly successful. It's another female minister, Judy Jacobs. And she said to me with very strong boldness, I like to be around people who intimidate me because they intimidate me to greatness. And I just, you know, pondered that, like, yeah, I don't really like to be around people that intimidate me. That's hard for me. I feel insignificant. It draws out my insecurities. But I mean, isn't that exactly what she's saying? And I think she's correct. Like, if we don't get in situations, if I'm always staying in my comfort zone, I have no room for growth. But what if I venture out? I mean, that's when my insecurities sometimes emerge, that is the greatest opportunity for my personal growth.
Yeah, John says, if you're the smartest person in the room, then you need to change the room.
Exactly. Then there's a problem, right? Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. That's how you learn, is you have to get around people that inspire you. I have to be around people that inspire me, that I can learn from. And you know, really, honestly, I feel like, and I believe this with all my heart, I can learn from everyone.
Absolutely.
I mean, everyone has a story to tell and something to share that's valuable. A child, an older person. I inherited a Sunday school class at our church, and my dad had asked me to teach the class. And to my shame, I declined because, of course, I thought I was too busy and too overwhelmed and all this other stuff. My kids were little. And so he just announced it from the pulpit that I would be teaching this class. And I was like, I cannot believe he's doing that. But I just smiled and put on my preacher's daughter's face. And wow, what a blessing that has been in my life. I've been teaching that class now for 15 years. And just frankly, the women in that class, they all got too old to teach it. So, I mean, you want to talk about intimidating. I mean, these are women who have studied the Word of God. They saw a lot of them were my Sunday school teachers, women I have known for a lot of my life. We have a multi-generational church, which is a great blessing. And I have walked with them through some very tremendous challenges. And one of the things that has just been such a blessing to me is that I would say probably about 7 of the women in my class, I have done their funerals. And it is so interesting to me how women really want to plan some of these details about their funerals. So in having these talks with them, you know, like, I want to talk to you about my funeral. These are the songs I want. And this is what I want you to say to my family. And these are the clothes I want to wear. And I've just had such great conversations with women as they're, you know, summing up their life. I am learning a tremendous amount just from that classroom experience. And it's because those women are so experienced in their life. And what they're sharing with me is incredibly valuable. It's priceless. And I was kind of stupid about that and didn't really understand what a powerful experience that could be for me. But I'm thankful that my dad forced me into it. And
yeah, sometimes that's the best way, right?
Treasure. Yes, it's a treasure in my life for sure.
So is there anything else you want to share with the audience before we close out?
You know, I could just talk and talk and talk. So I'll try to limit it down to something simple. How about that?
Sounds perfect.
here's what I want to say in closing. How we measure progress is super important for every leader. And maybe we don't measure our progress. And this is something that I learned as a student at the Evansville Psychiatric Children's Center. I worked with a psychiatrist who was ADHD himself. And I mean, what a character, what a brilliant man, so unconventional. I mean, just in a tremendous physician. So I had the extreme blessing of just being around him. But he would remind us that we don't measure progress by the goal that we're trying to achieve. Instead, let's look back and see how far we've come. Because if we're making progress, then we can encourage ourselves. We can give ourselves a pat on the back. And when you're a community leader and you're leading in hard and difficult situations, sometimes that is so important for the leader. Because if I get discouraged, Rick, the people around me are going to be discouraged. I can't invigorate. I can't inspire. I can't influence people. If my ship is sinking, if I'm discouraged, then discouragement will come to those around me. But if my passion remains full, if my excitement is full, if the power that I feel to just get involved and solve and let's work together and let's be collaborative, that is very, very contagious. And that comes from measurable progress. And we set goals and we do all of those great things. But let's always remember to take a look back and say, look how far we've come. This is where we were. This is where we are now. But this is where we want to go. And so we use that progress to be an encourager to fuel us into the future.
That's beautiful. I think that's exactly where we stop this. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode. And we look forward to following your career in the future.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Ms. Julie Wells. Mike, what were some of your takeaways from that discussion Rick had with Julie?
Yeah, I really had two things, Paul, that I pulled out that I think our listeners want to really grab a hold of. Number one is problems are not unsolvable, right? And I'm reminded when she said that, I was reminded of Thomas Edison, right? The old quote when the newspaper guy was asking Thomas Edison, how come he kept trying to make the light bulb, right? And he's failed so many, 10,000 times or 1,000 times, whatever. I've heard the quote, different ways, but Thomas Edison said, I haven't failed 10,000 times. I've simply learned 10,000 ways that didn't work. And so he didn't see problems as unsolvable. He knew he could find a way. And as leaders, we can do that as well. And that's what Julie shared with us. Problems aren't unsolvable. There is a way if we just keep looking, right? If we just hang on long enough. John Maxwell talks about that a lot. I've heard John talk about that many, many times. That if the reason I can solve problems, I've heard him say it this way. The reason I can solve problems that others can is because I just stick with it a little bit longer. I don't give up as quick as others. And then Julie said, don't be overwhelmed. Just start looking for solutions, right? And there are some people, they panic when there's a problem. There's some people who just quit. They get overwhelmed. They sit down. They sit on their hands and do nothing. But Julie challenged us, don't be overwhelmed. Just start looking for solutions, looking at it from a different angle. Walk around it. I think of it, my son's a golfer, Paul, and on the putting green, what the golfer does is they kind of look at the putt from all different angles, right? They walk around the hole. They look at the green. How's the ball going to break? What's the grain doing? Those kind of things. And when we see problems that way, we look at it from different angles. We begin to see solutions that weren't there before. How about you, Paul? What were your takeaways?
I like how she embraces obstacles as well, right? In fact, they seem to supercharge her a bit, which is kind of interesting. I like that. And I can't help but think that's the mindset we can all adapt to. We can have that. I call it the MacGyver mindset. And I love your story about your son. Einstein shares that in the midst of difficulty lies opportunities, or in the midst of obstacles lies opportunities, to your point earlier. So when we look around, we can start to see those things. Later in the discussion, Julie shares about how she leads her team. I thought that was powerful too. She shares, I don't want my team that I'm leading to be afraid of failure. Mistakes are the price that we pay for progress.
That's so good. I love that.
She adds that she began to learn that fear inhibits creativity. And if we are afraid of failing, then all of those great stories that are for us to tell can never be told. So all the stories that we could tell can't be told unless we fail forward. We can't be afraid of failing. So it's only highly successful people who fail multiple times who learn to know what works and what doesn't work. And you mentioned Edison a moment ago. And that's how we find success. By failing, we learn. But we've got to get back up and face our obstacles. So some good takeaways. So Mike, let's dive into this concept of overcoming obstacles. What are some common obstacles a leader might face, and why is it important that we face them?
We can have fun with this one, Paul. This is a great question. You know, you put leader and obstacles in the same question, right? And what are some common obstacles? Well, as a leader, people are always obstacles, right? I mean, if it weren't for people, Paul, we would all be pretty good leaders, right? I mean, people can become obstacles to us because, let's face it, if it weren't for people, leadership would be easy. The personalities that we have to deal with, Paul, you and I have been working together for, what, about 8 years now, and our personalities are different. And you and I have had challenging, difficult conversations at times in the partnership that we've had, you know, over the years. And we've learned to work together and work through it. Many leaders aren't willing to do that, right? They just see a person as a problem. They see a person as an obstacle, and they start trying to find ways to get the person off the team instead of becoming a better leader, instead of learning how to communicate with that difficult personality or that difficult person. So people are always going to be obstacles, Paul. Selfishness. You know, my way or no way thinking is an obstacle because as leaders, you know, we often want our own way. I'm the boss. I've got the experience. I've got the education. I've been here longer. I mean, these are all selfish comments that maybe we don't say those things literally, but in our heads, oftentimes leaders are saying those things. And then a lack of communication and clarity. Those are obstacles that I see almost every team and organization I go into where there's a lack of communication and a lack of clarity. Leaders wanting their team to guess which way they need to go. They haven't created a clear picture or clear vision. And if they have, they haven't communicated that. So those are obstacles, Paul, that leaders face. It's important that we face those. You know, we look in the mirror and we say, I'm not going to let those become obstacles for me. I'm going to drive my team forward by removing those things. How about you? What are some obstacles? I know, you know, you're a leader of a big business, a great business, Paul, but I'm sure you faced obstacles. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's great. You know, if we're not facing obstacles, then we're probably heading in the wrong direction. When I think of obstacles is, I guess we think of something or someone that blocks our path, right? That's the common perception of what obstacles are. Something or someone that blocks our path. And let's pull on that for a second. So obstacles, if you think about it, right? So what can block our path? They come in all forms and sizes, right? It can be a lack of resources, maybe financial resources. It can be a lack of courage. Maybe we think there's a lack of opportunities for us. Maybe there's some sort of impediment that's just keeping us from doing what we need to do, a frustration. Maybe it's just bad timing or maybe bad support of others. We're just not getting the support that we need from our team. Maybe those obstacles can be fears or worry or anxiety. Think about that, right? So all those things kind of pop up and they all become, in our mind's eye, obstacles. We all face obstacles, but obstacles, here's the beauty of it, Mike. Obstacles reveal us, right? They share something about us. So when I see a team member going through an obstacle, I can learn something about them. John, in his book, Intentional Living, talks about the four different types of people that are revealed when obstacles appear. This is powerful stuff. The first type of person is the I can't person, all right? The I can't people, they're convinced that they can't, so they won't, and they don't. The second type of person is the I don't think I can person, right? So the I don't think I can people, these are people who are certainly capable, there's no doubt about it, but they talk themselves out of it. Their good intention is rarely followed through with action. And the third type of person is the can I person. Now, the can I people, these are folks that want it, but fear and doubt kind of invade their head and they often chicken out at the last minute. They'll do it if someone else gives them permission, but they're struggling with it. They're that close though. And then the last person is the how can I person, right? Now, the how can I people, these are the folks who have already made the decision to take on the tough challenges. They're willing to get out of their comfort zone and make magic happen. John Maxwell says that the last kind of person there, those kind of people, those are his kind of people. Because with them, everything is possible and he wants them on their team. So Mike, let's kind of dive deeper though. What are some ways leaders can help influence others to overcome obstacles?
Yeah, communication, number one, Paul. The number one way to overcome obstacles is we've got to be willing to communicate. As leaders, we've got to communicate about what the obstacles are, what they may be, how we're going to move around them when we face them, right? I mean, we can't avoid all obstacles, but as leaders, we've got to be willing to communicate that, hey, these are possibilities. These are things that we may run up against. And here's what we're going to do when we get there. So I think, you know, preemptive striking is what I call it, right? Preemptive communication. preempt the obstacles before they get there. Because what happens is, as leaders, if we wait until the obstacle appears and then we're trying to give direction, what we find out is the obstacle has been there for a while and our team, our followers, have been waiting for us to give instruction. So maybe it's been days or weeks or months that obstacle is there and there's been no forward motion. And that's because there's a lack of communication, right? So communication is number one. And then number two is we've got to allow for mistakes. Julie talked about that. You know, she doesn't want her team to fear making mistakes. We've got to allow for that. I do a lot of work in the healthcare industry, Paul. And sometimes in healthcare, you're not allowed to make mistakes, right? I mean, if you're operating on my brain, please don't make a mistake, right? But in leadership, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to make some decisions that are poor. We've got to allow our team to make mistakes as well, because that's how they learn. That's how they grow. And so those are the two things, Paul, I think, that I just want to share today with our listeners, how to overcome, influence others to overcome obstacles, is communicate, communicate, and communicate, and communicate, and then allow for mistakes. Communicate that you're willing to let them make mistakes as well. What about you? How do you think you can help leaders overcome those obstacles?
Yeah, I like that communication thing. And that's probably where it starts for me. I think the first thing I would try to do is encourage them. And encouraging them means I've got to communicate. And encouraging them means also that second point is allowing them to make mistakes. Because when they make mistakes, they're going to feel bad. You know, they may be feeling lots of things even before they take action, right? So obstacles, usually people are reluctant to take action because they see the obstacle. They may have fear. They may have frustration. They may have some confusion, maybe some anger. Maybe some sadness or depression. I don't know. Something is keeping them from doing what they ought to be doing. So I need to encourage them. I like that communication part. I need to give them permission to make a mistake. Because mistakes, some of our best lessons learned are through the mistakes that I've made. I love what Walt Disney shares. He talks about the challenges are part of life. He says that all the adversity I've had in my life, all my troubles and obstacles have strengthened me. You may not realize it when it happens, but a kick in the teeth may be the best thing in the world for you. That's Walt Disney, the Mickey Mouse guy, right? So that's powerful. For every challenge offers a choice, though. We choose our emotion. We choose our response. We can choose to draw back and play it safe, allowing that obstacle to have the rule of the day. Or we can choose to step forward and discover something bigger. And the magic happens, again, when we get out of our comfort zone. So Mike, let's dive in on this, man. This is so powerful. We've learned so much from different leaders, and it's great having these kind of dialogues. Tell our listeners what they can do to help us tell the other stories of other leaders who are helping people overcome obstacles.
Yeah, as we do on every episode, Paul, we like to ask our listeners to identify leaders for us that we can interview on the Transformational Leader Podcast. This conversation with Julie Wells today was just one more of many more to come, and many more that you're going to share with us. And we want to invite you to go to www.johnmaxwellteam.com/leader. Again, www.johnmaxwellteam.com, and identify leaders for us that we can reach out to and interview on the Transformational Leader Podcast and share them with us. You know, we don't know everybody, but you know somebody we don't know, and we want you to go to www.johnmaxwellteam.com/leader and let us know who they are.
So good. Well, Mike, it's time again to land the plane. Share with me and everybody, what is a tip and challenge that you want to leave our listeners?
Yeah, Paul. So my tip today is don't panic when a challenge comes, right? They're not a reflection of poor leadership. They're just a part of leadership. Let me say that again. Challenge is going to come. It's not a reflection of poor leadership. It's a part of leadership. That's the tip. The challenge is pick an obstacle that's been overwhelming you and your team for some time. One that's been there that you've been, you not really want to kind of pull the Band-Aid off and look at. Pick that obstacle. Take the team, write down the first and then the second, then the third steps. Write down those steps, first step, second step, third step that you can take tomorrow to move through that obstacle. But don't do this alone. Your team can help you. Get your team together and say, okay, we've got this obstacle. Let's look at it. What's the first thing we can do? What's the second thing we can do? What's the third thing we can do to begin to move this obstacle toward resolution? That's my tip. That's my challenge for our listeners today, Paul.
That's so good. Yeah, I like it. There was a book I read a few years ago called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's a great book. And he shares that whatever we face, we have a choice. Will we be blocked by obstacles or will we advance through them and over them? And that ties to what you just shared. My tip for everybody is a Michael Jordan quote, right? Mike, you like Michael Jordan, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Love him.
So he says this, if you're trying to achieve, there will be roadblocks. I've had them. Everybody's had them. But obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into a wall, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. Great quote from Jordan. And the challenge, therefore, is find a way to be a how can I person that John Maxwell talks about. Be that kind of person, a how can I person. Yeah. That'll get you through the obstacle.
That's good. Love that quote from Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player ever. I know I just made some LeBron James fans mad, didn't I, Paul? Hey, we want to thank once again the John Maxwell team. John Maxwell and his team is a sponsor of our Transformational Leader podcast. If you need a coach, a speaker, a trainer, an influencer for your team, for your organization, for your tribe, just someone who can help you and your team overcome those obstacles that you're facing, we want to invite you to look no further than the John Maxwell team. We know we have someone near your community or location. There's over 23,000 certified John Maxwell speakers, trainers, and coaches around the globe, Paul. Just visit www.johnmaxwellteam.com and you can find someone near you.
Great conversation today, Mike. Great topic on overcoming obstacles. For all our listeners out there, remember, transformational leadership always starts with you. We'll see you next time.